Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Jared Renshaw, 28 years of combination experience, fire commissioner with Western Berks Fire Department in Pennsylvania. From a very young age, Jared knew the fire service was what he wanted to be a part of. As soon as he hit the age of 15, Jared began his journey starting out as a volunteer, and after a few years began applying any and everywhere he could to try and become a career firefighter. Once he was able to obtain that goal, Jared remained all in when it came to the job, making sure he remembers why he's there and who he's there for. Mentorship and who you surround yourself with plays a huge factor in how you view the job. Fortunately for Jared, he picked up on the good and bad experiences which has shaped him to who he is today. A chief who knows it's not all about him and does everything he can for the betterment of his department and community. Jared drops a few nuggets along the way in the interview which were spot on. I hope you all enjoy the conversation. With that, I present Jared Renshaw.
Hey, Danny. So I'm Jared Renshaw. I'm the fire commissioner with the Western Berks Fire Department. So we're an outer ring suburb of Reading, Pennsylvania, which is located in eastern PA within Berks County. So we're just west of Hershey, PA, just north of Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Okay. So my start in the fire service, it's kind of a cool story. You know, everybody always talks about when they're a kid, you know, you love fire trucks and you kind of want to be a firefighter. And I never lost that. And I'm fortunate to do that today. But my real start came when I was little, like I'm talking 3, 4, 5 years old. So my family's all from a little town called Carnegie, Pennsylvania, which is just outside of Pittsburgh. And my mom was a flight attendant and my grandmother was actually the borough secretary in Carnegie. So growing up, when my mom was on flights, I spent a lot of time at my grandmother's house, and she would take me to work with her in the mornings because the bus for preschool would come and pick me up there. And I would go down to the office with her. I'd get my bowl of cereal, and at that time, Carnegie still had a paid fire chief. So, you know, my grandmother was busy doing work, and I was down, like, you know, in the police station side of things and over in this side of the office. But I'd get my bowl of cereal, and I'd always go to the fire chief's office every morning and eat my breakfast. And his name was Larry Collins, and I'd go into his office, he'd get up from his desk, he'd go sit on his couch, I'd sit at his desk, I'd eat my breakfast, we'd watch TV, then he'd take me over and show me the fire trucks. And, you know, typically the bus would show up, I'd still be over there, my grandmother would come over yelling, screaming, you know, the bus, you know, I'm late for the bus. And but that was kind of where I got the hook to, you know, join the fire service. You know, something that, you know, 3, 4 years old, something that, you know, a good family friend that was, you know, a trusted person started showing me around, and, you know, I just fell in love with it. And, you know, that kind of turned into when I joined the volunteer service. When I turned 15, the day after my 15th birthday, I became a volunteer firefighter in South Fayette Township, PA, where I lived, and did that for 8 years. Then I was hired in 2006. With the James Island Public Service District Fire Department in South Carolina, so right next to the city of Charleston.
Okay.
worked there for almost 8 years, and I left out of there, and I took a battalion chief's job in California with a department called the City of California City. It's out in Kern County, out in what they call the High Desert area. So I worked there as the BC, which was technically the second in command. We didn't have a deputy or an assistant. So it was the fire chief, myself, and then it went down into the, you know, the rank and file, the line officers. But we were a one station department. We covered 203 square miles with 1 4 person ALS engine company. Did about 2,500 to 3,000 runs a year out of that station. Great, great fire department, great people. You know, and I just got to give them a quick little plug. They actually ceased being a fire department on December 31st of 2025. So the city actually contracted out fire service protection with Kern County Fire. So it's kind of the end of an era for Cal City Fire. It was, you know, I still talk to guys from there all the time, you know, on a weekly basis. I talk to guys I worked with from there. And, you know, I was happy that all the guys that are still there that I know, they got new jobs with the county, they moved over. But yeah, so the California City Fire Department is no longer. So I worked there for a couple of years, and my wife, who's from Eastern PA, not far from where we're at now, we started talking about wanting to have kids and not be on the other side of the country. away from family. We wanted our kids to grow up around family. And there was also some stuff going on with the city, the way that we were funded. We had a special tax, and I was kind of the new guy on the block, but knowing that if the special tax didn't pass, we would be laying people off, and it wasn't fair for me, even though I was kind of out of that realm, for me to keep my job, but guys who had been there longer, that they could have possibly have lost theirs. And these were guys that already had, established families, children. So that's where we started to kind of look somewhere else. It wasn't that I hated the department. I loved it. I loved working there. It was great. It was busy, great people. But there was just a lot that played into it. So that's how we ended up here at Western Berks. So I
Okay.
applied for this job and started here in August of 2015. So been here over 10 years now.
Okay. Now, obviously, you said from an early age, the fire service is what you wanted to do. And as soon as you hit the age of 15, you were a diehard volunteer, and then you switched to the career side. My question to you is, out of all places, how'd you end up in South Carolina?
Just started taking tests and just started looking everywhere. Unfortunately, like the part of Pennsylvania I grew up in, Western PA, you have the city of Pittsburgh, which of course is the big fish in the small pond out there. But I wasn't a city resident, so at the time I couldn't test for the city of Pittsburgh Fire Department. There were a couple other departments around there, smaller agencies that were career, but other than that, there's not a ton of paid fire positions in Pennsylvania. So that's where a buddy of mine that I went to high school with, we were volunteers together. We just started testing different places. We would, apply somewhere. We'd pack up the car. We'd go stay at a hotel. We'd take tests. I took a bunch of tests, and we just kind of kept going down the map. I had a login or an account for firerecruit.com. I don't know if you ever heard of that. I had that, and this was really before kind of Facebook. I mean, MySpace, I think, was kind of coming around, but. You didn't have all the social media job postings that we have today to go find somewhere and to really do your research on a department. So it was finding a job on Fire Recruit, trying to go to their website and just literally printing out applications, filling them out and mailing them in, and just kept kind of going down the map and tested in like Rock Hill, South Carolina, and Midway, South Carolina, Charlotte, you name it. I was just kind of going down the list and ended up testing at James Island and, went down there. I was there as a kid on vacation, but, now as an adult, I'm going back and I'm like, man, I could live here. I mean, Charleston's an amazing city. It's beautiful. And I said, I could go work at a place and live somewhere where people pay thousands of dollars a year to go on vacation. And at 23 years old, like, why not? Why not venture away from home, do something exciting, go somewhere cool, beautiful weather, beaches. So that's how I ended up there.
Okay. Now, I'm assuming, did you have to do some sort of recruit academy or class?
Yeah, we did like orientation stuff there. So like I was considered like a direct hire. So coming in with like Fire One, Fire Two, EMT. Down there, at that time, South Carolina, the larger departments kind of had their own recruit schools, smaller departments, unfortunately, budget constraints was a huge thing and it still is there. So they were real big on direct hires, but then you're doing orientation, at the fire department. So you're doing, kind of on the job orientation, internal training with them, to get you up to speed. So I never went through, a true recruit school, coming up in the fire service, like Pennsylvania stuff. We had what was called the essentials of firefighting. And then, going into Fire One, Fire Two, and taking the prep classes and testing out for that. But that's kind of how I went in there. So there was no recruit school, but it was basically just like an internal, on the job kind of, internal recruit school for the department type of thing. So it wasn't a true on, weeks and weeks and weeks at an academy. It was internal for them.
Okay. And so upon completion and getting your assignment, let's just say after the first few weeks, was being a career firefighter everything you thought it would be?
Oh yeah. Man, I can remember my first shift. So I got hired August 30th of 2006, and I remember my first full 24-hour shift I worked. It was a Sunday. Which I'm not saying that a Sunday is a bad day to come in, but you're really not doing a whole lot on it. You know how departments go. But man, I can remember getting dressed that morning, and we started shift at 7:15, and it was probably 10 after 5, and I was already up and dressed. And I didn't live far away, so it's not like I had a long commute. But man, I can remember just putting my uniform on and like standing in front of the mirror and, achieving a goal that I had set for myself, years before, and then sitting there, man, I'm going to work at a fire station. I'm getting to go do something that I've been doing for free for a long time. And don't get me wrong, if I wasn't career, I'd still be a volunteer somewhere just for the love of the fire service. But yeah, standing in front of the mirror, looking at my uniform, polishing my badge, polishing my name tag, like I was it was just a thrill. It was just a the accomplishment, but B, knowing that I'm going to work in a fire station and that's going to be my job was one of the coolest things in the world.
And so, with that department, how long did you wait before you decided to start moving up the ranks, and why?
So it's unfortunately I didn't really wait. They kind of pushed. And I was fortunate, I came up in a volunteer fire department. I had some really great officers that, all kind of had their specialties with everything. I was one of the things that I was at the Fairview Volunteer Fire Department. And our line officers between our chiefs and our captain and lieutenants, they all had their kind of like little things that they were kind of their, I wouldn't say their specialty, but it's what they were good at. So you could call it their specialty. And so I was coming up, I started driving fire engines when I was 21, 18, 19, 20, 21. And they started the driver training process. And we had guys that for their full-time jobs drove bigger trucks. So when it came to driving fire apparatus, they really taught you a lot of great stuff when it came to driving, things I still do to this day or pass on the information to others. But James Island, it was a great department. But it was just unfortunate, you know how the money is in the South. That they were, it was a kind of a revolving door of a place where guys would come from the North and the Northeast and the Midwest and get their time in with the career department there and then leave and go somewhere else. So it wasn't that I wanted to move up so fast, but it was more out of the necessity for the fire department and that they wanted you to start, getting driver trained. And my captain and my engine, my captain, when I started James Island, was a guy named Tim Rooks. My engineer was a guy named William Green. And they were top-notch guys to work for. And they just kind of, my captain came to me and said, we want you to start driver training, and that was probably after like 6 months, 7 months, I rode the back seat, but I started the process, but I wasn't thrown into it right away. So there was, a pretty big process there with going through engineer testing and, A, having classes and then getting drive time and then working with them. But yeah, it was, you kind of get put in that, predict, situation. And then,
And then from checked off driver, did you continue to move up?
Yeah. So, it's funny, you become a driver and then you start kind of working on that acting captain stuff. That again, that was one of those things where you shadow other folks. Your captain would end up riding the back seat and you'd ride the front seat. You shift people around. You have like a guy that's coming to be a backup driver. He would drive for you. You would act captain. The captain would sit in the back. I don't want to say that they rushed you through. It was a good process, but they had to do what they had to do as a fire department is. And I didn't, back then I didn't understand it, but as I get older and I get in the position I'm in now, I get it. I understand it. So yeah, you had a lot of good mentoring, a lot of good job shadowing, giving you the ability to make those decisions in a controlled kind of environment because you have somebody else watching you, that whole time, and then just kind of kept progressing up from there. So.
And the opportunity to go out west, how did that come about?
All right. So my department at James Island, we actually hired a battalion chief in from the outside. We hired a guy in from California. His name is Jeff Armstrong. Jeff came in as the BC on my shift. And so James Island had four stations. Headquarters had the ladder and the battalion chief, and then stations 2, 3, and 4 each had an engine. So we had an on shift account of 17 people. And Jeff was my BC on my shift. And we just kind of became friends. And it was great when he came in and kind of brought that breath of fresh air because it's somebody from outside the department bringing in some great new ideas. I didn't have a whole understanding of the California Fire Service, and he came in and he was like, kind of brought some new ideas, which was great. So we just kind of became friends, and he ended up leaving and took the chief's job in California City. And he said, "Hey, I'm hiring a BC. Would you consider applying?" It's his second in command, and I'm a firm believer of that. A chief should have say in who their second in command is. You want somebody that has the same visions and goals as them. You don't want somebody that's rowing the boat in a different direction all the time.
Right.
And he had said that, and I said, "Well, okay, sure, I'll apply." I didn't really expect it to go any further than that. I just figured I'd apply and, appease him. And then next thing they're going through applicants, and I'm getting a phone call from HR asking me to come out and interview. So yeah, that's kind of how that all unfolded. The biggest thing when I went out there was, these guys all worked together for a long time, and there was a captain that had worked there longer than I'd been alive when I got out there. So I knew coming in, I was 30 years old when I went out
Wow.
there,
Okay.
and it's a completely different world. And I just kind of, I knew my first thing was that I was going to have to build trust. So I didn't come in ruffling feathers. I didn't say we're going to do it this way. I didn't talk about their operations, their tactics, their strategies. I just kind of ingrained myself in the way that they did things, and it was only because they were good at it. They went to a lot of fires. That's a very busy little fire department that goes to a decent amount of structure fires a year. And in the city there was a ton of vacant homes. There was a lot of gang violence. The guys were busy, so I kind of just ingrained myself in them, and then wanted to build their trust. So I treaded very lightly for a long time, but I asked them a ton of questions. So it wasn't me coming in saying we're going to do X, Y, and Z. It was, well, how would you guys do this, or how would you guys do this, or how should I do this, or what could I do? And I think that kind of went a long way. And then I finally got what I will say was the eclipse moment, where I was A shift was working that day, and it was Captain Kenny Mylander, Engineer Rob Marks, Firefighter Andrew Roach, and Firefighter Caleb Souders. Three out of those four I still talk to on a regular basis. Those guys were all sitting around the kitchen table, and I sat down with them and I said, "Man, wouldn't it be cool to go to a fire today?" And I remember Andrew Roach was like, "What'd you just say?" And I'm like, "Yeah, wouldn't it be great, man? Don't you want to go to, man, we haven't been to a fire in like 2 weeks. Like, man, let's go to a fire today." And that was like the aha moment with them, with A shift. That's how I won over A shift, with just, "Man, I really want to go to a fire. I really love this job. I want to do this job. Let's go out and get it." And then you kind of just won each shift over different ways. C shift, I lived in the city, and I'd stop by the station all the time. And the city's kind of in the middle of nowhere, so if you want to go to a really good grocery store, it's like 45 minutes to an hour away. C shift was always big on cooking dinner, so a lot of times when I'd make grocery store runs when they were working, I'd always stop in and, "Hey, what do you guys need from the grocery store? I'm going there tonight. What do you guys want, so you don't have to drive all the way out there or send somebody out there?" So that was kind of how I went over C shift. So I kind of found my own ways to win over each shift, and build their trust, because it is true. We always say that, if you have three different shifts, you have three different fire departments. And I think that's an apartment of any size, a metropolitan apartment, big city, small department. But I just kind of wanted to win over each shift when I went out there.
And so what was, if you don't mind talking about, what were your some of your responsibilities with that role?
So, man, I had training under me, like fleet maintenance, like equipment. Myself and the fire chief would rotate as like the duty officer for the city. So like we both lived in the city, so even at night, like we'd rotate as the duty officer. But I was fortunate that the fire chief also started to really involve me in that higher level admin type of stuff. So he, I would go to senior staff meetings, I'd go to council meetings. He did a really good job of preparing me for that next level. He also did a good job of preparing me to take, if he's out of town, I could fill his role, as the acting fire chief, or I could go to a council meeting and not be a bumbling idiot, and be able to speak to council and speak to the residents. So I, you kind of did it all. It's a smaller department. We had, great guys on the line between The firefighters, the engineers, and the captains, they all had kind of their own individual responsibilities that they did. But, A, to support their individual responsibilities that they had. So, like, Andrew, that was involved with, ordering med supplies, I would back him up with that.
Okay.
Or hey, you need me to do this, or go pick this up for you, or hey, we, Rob Marks that did, all the vehicle maintenance. All right, hey, we have to get this truck down for service. All right, I'll drive you down there, or I'll come pick you up, or, you kind of just fill in the gaps and fill in the holes where it's needed to make the department successful. So the, I wouldn't say, yeah, there was a job description for me, but, you could really just kind of X all that out and just say whatever it entails to keep the department moving forward and keep it going.
Okay. Now, as far as promoting, some would say promoting early, in some organizations, it's a necessity. Like you kind of have no choice. But what is your take on any individual coming in that decides they want to start moving up? Is it, but it might be a little bit too early for others or for that individual, and others kind of view that as like a negative connotation. What's your view take on moving up the ranks early?
So I think it's kind of like a twofold thing. One, we know people that are our rock stars in our fire department, right? You know people that they may be at a younger age or maybe not have as much time, but they're going to be successful in that position. We know that. You know, in any agency, you can point out, man, that guy's a rock star. They're gonna we need them in there. Where other people, like, they're just not ready for it. You throw them into the deep end of the pool and it's either sink or swim, and they're sinking. I think it has to be that balance. I think you have to crawl, walk, then run. So, how do you expect somebody to pump a fire apparatus they've never been on a nozzle? To have that understanding. So you have, and you're only gonna get time on the, like, let's face it, like my department, we're not going to fires every day. What department? I mean, there are departments that do that,
Right. Not
but
many, not many.
right, but not many. For a majority of us, we're not going to fires all the time. So how can you expect somebody to get time on a nozzle in a year or two that you need to have that time and grade to really have that understanding? So you understand how the fire scene works before you can drive, and then have that time in as a driver, because now you're sitting next to the officer. You're not in the back of the truck anymore. You and the officer are right next to each other. You're having an understanding of what they're doing because you're working side by side with them. So it, I think it pays off to have time in as a driver before you become, an officer. Even like that requisite knowledge of an area. You don't learn streets sitting in the back of a truck. You do a better job learning the streets sitting in the left front seat. And, I drove for people, and then vice versa, people drove for me, where, hey, where are we going? And the captain's the one helping you. If you don't have a computer in front of you or something else, or the computer goes down, you need to know where that street is. If you don't have a map book, and so you're relying on that captain. But how are you going to know as a captain where to go if you didn't have that time in as a driver?
True.
So
True.
I think it's that crawl, walk, run type of thing where, you really have to have that time, in grade, learn that job of the person above you. I'm a firm believer of that, but you really can't learn that job of the person above you until you've been in your job to have that full understanding of how it goes and how it operates.
Absolutely. Okay. Love it. Love it. Now, Western Berks, you mentioned that obviously, you and your wife at the time were like, hey, we want to have children. We don't have any family out west. Was it a difficult decision to make the move back home? And how did Western Berks come about?
So the decision to move, we waited. I always laugh. You remember the TV show Full House?
Yeah.
Remember that? You remember when, like, Jesse and Joey are like, they have the scale and they're like putting checkers on and they're
Yes,
weighing,
yeah.
like, that was like me and my wife decided on how to go to Western Berks. We literally had
Okay.
lists, like, what do we do?
Okay.
The ease of the move, and that wasn't bad because we didn't have kids yet. So we're not
Gotcha.
uprooting a whole family. My wife and I are in our, early to mid 30s, so it wasn't a tough thing. How Western Birds came about was just searching for jobs, looking at some different, like, fire recruit or the IFC website. just kind of looking for jobs on the East Coast. And like I said, the nice thing was it wasn't stressful because I wasn't looking to leave where I was. I didn't have to leave. I didn't really want to leave, but there were so many, as we talked earlier, there was a lot of factors playing into it. And that's kind of how I found Western Berks. I just saw the job posting, went on their website, went on their Facebook, and I was like, oh man, it's great. It's a, combination fire department. So it's, career and volunteer. And I just, all right, I'll apply. And, next thing you know, hey, we'd like you to do a phone interview. And then I had actually never been to Berks County, even growing up in PA, this on the other side of the state. I'd never been here until I came here for my interview. So showed up and did the interview, got the job offer. And then, excuse me, my wife and I put everything on a moving truck. We did the cross country drive, then saw the sights on the way, and then got here to Western Berks back in August 2015.
Okay. With that, for those that don't know, can you tell us a little bit about the department, the size, did the had the transition already happen, things of that nature?
Yeah, of course. It's really cool to talk about because this was kind of only the second department in the state to ever kind of do this. So in 2009, Western Berks Fire Department was formed, and it was the culmination of a merger of four separate individual volunteer fire companies. Now in Pennsylvania, which makes it very unique. So when you talk North Carolina, South Carolina, a lot of different parts of the country, you have unincorporated areas. That you have, countywide fire services, or in South Carolina, public service districts. In Pennsylvania, you don't have any unincorporated area. So everything is affiliated with the municipality. And our municipality types in PA are boroughs, townships, and cities. So this Western Berks, there was two townships and two boroughs that each had their own independent volunteer fire companies that merged to become Western Berks Fire Department. So that was back in 2009. So when I got in 2015, we're doing about 800 runs a year. We have a first due area of 32 square miles, four stations. We had four career firefighters at the time. We added two more in 2018. So our career firefighters, they work Monday through Friday, staggered shifts. So we staff two stations Monday through Friday, and we have a 6-2 guy, an 8-4 guy, and a 10-6 guy at each station. So that way, we have two stations that are staffed when the volunteers are at work. And then it's all volunteer response nights and weekends. So we did, like last year, we did 1,473 calls. So, we went, like I said, from 800 in 2015 now up to 1,473. We're seeing a boom in tons of commercial development coming into our area. Our area is very unique because of, our two boroughs are, they're pretty much built out. They're older. They're dating back to the late 1700s, early 1800s with a lot of buildings. So, the boroughs have, row homes, duplexes, apartments. Our townships have, mega mansions and, these industrial parks. And now we're seeing, farmers are selling off what they have, and now they're building more stuff. So our population that we serve is probably around 23, 24,000, based off the last census, which is a increase from like 17, 18,000 from like when I started, or like when the right before I started. So we're seeing a big growth here, and we've kept up with the challenges. I give the people in this fire department the utmost kudos for it, because we started to really identify ways that we were lacking. So back in like 2017, 2018, we saw crazy thunderstorms that were coming through our area. And we get the typical, pumping out basements and water, whatever. But we started to see a big significant increase in urban flooding in our area, and we weren't prepared for it. The police department wasn't going to do it. EMS isn't going to do it. The fire department has to do it. So, I watched this, people in this department really put their best foot forward and say, we need to start doing something with water rescue. So we, started that whole thing. Really, technology driven department, not just when you talk about data and stats, but we got a drone on a state grant and, deploy that and fly that thing all the time, and it's not just for fire related things. We assist police nonstop, not even just like missing persons thing. We're supporting police operations, with our drone. We've done that. We just ordered a new engine last year. We had a new ladder delivered in 2016. Talking about trying to build a new firehouse. It's a lot of cool things. And, we're governed by a board that's made up of our elected officials and then firefighters that are voted in at large. That's who I report to. Those are my bosses. But it's great. We have four municipalities that are kind of all supportive of us. It's amazing when you have that. You have, four separate, municipal groups that really support our mission, really support what we're doing, and want to have the best fire department around. So they've given us 110% support. So it's been great. It's really been a hell of a ride, since I've been here. My wife and I came here married without kids, and now we have a 9-year-old son and a 4-year-old son, and we're raising them here. And it's just a great place to be and a great group of people to be around.
Now, you are the second, at least that I know of, second department to come together due to the fact that you understand volunteerism is declining, especially in Pennsylvania, because I've read articles on like the decline in numbers of volunteers. I did an interview 3 or 4 weeks back with Chief Brett Graham. With Lower Paxton Fire and how they merged three different organizations into one. I see a trend that I hopefully would hope that others in the Pennsylvania area, not really only Pennsylvania, but there's areas throughout the country that they're struck, like, the volunteer service is made, the fire service is made mostly up of volunteers. Not a lot of people know that, except, firemen, of course. But what's your take on organizations that, because it's just my opinion that, the fire service, we're a prideful thing. Traditions, fire department companies that have been formed for many, 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 many years. And unfortunately, we have some in leadership that just don't want to merge. They don't want to get with the times. They're just like, hey, we'll make do. But at some point, making do is not making the best decisions for the citizens.
I've said it for even before I left to go to South Carolina. I had said that the township where I grew up, it's 25 square miles, and there's four separate fire companies in that township. So it's kind of like Lower Paxton, where you have three fire companies in one township. That's what we had. We had four. They still have four today. These departments are each doing their own fundraising. They have their own set of officers. They have their own paint schemes. They wear their own color bunker gear. But in Allegheny County, where I grew up, at one time there was over like 200 volunteer fire departments in Allegheny County. That's insanity. There is they did a study years ago that there was more fire apparatus in Allegheny County than there was for New York City, and we have a Allegheny County is a population of, I don't know, 1 million people. And there's more fire apparatus in Allegheny County than there is New York City with a population of, what, 8 million or 9 million or whatever it is. But it's, people a lot of times, and I've said this to friends, they think it's their last name on the side of the fire truck and not the department name. And don't get me wrong, I'm all about having department pride, and I'm all about, loving your department and talking it up and having that confidence when you speak about it, that little bit of bragging but you have to remember it's the department, and you're there for the service for the citizens and what's best. And a lot of people lose sight of that. There's tons of egos, tons of personal agendas. The one thing that kills Pennsylvania when it comes to the fire service, and this is I call it a crutch, is that we're a commonwealth. So everything is left to the local level here in PA. So there's actually no state mandated fire training anything in Pennsylvania. So you Danny, you could join a fire you could join some fire departments tomorrow, get a set of gear the next day, and be riding a fire truck with absolutely nothing under your belt. They leave everything to the local level, which, hey, if you have a progressive fire department, yeah, they're gonna force training. They're gonna push it. They're gonna make it happen. Where a lot of chiefs, if they don't have training, guess what? They're not going to make anybody get training because they don't have it themselves. That's it. So it's kind of like a roll of the dice. The Pennsylvania Turnpike is a road that stretches east to west that you have to pay to drive on. I would say it's a roll of the dice on, God forbid, if you wreck here at this mile marker, what type of level of service are you going to get? You should have wrecked the mile down. You would have got, better level of service.
Gotcha.
But elected officials at the state level, and yeah, our state senators and state reps, they do a great job with a lot of things, but they're never going to mandate fire training because they're never going to get reelected. Let's face it, you piss off, the volunteer fire service in your area or fire service in your area as a whole, people aren't going to vote for you. Mergers are the way to go. Consolidations are the way to go. I look at us and what we've been able to accomplish as a merged department. My office is at our headquarters station, which is in the borough of Warnersville. It's 0.8 square miles. It has a population of 2,400 people, but they have career firefighters sitting at their firehouse during the day. Like where what other place in the country with 2,400 residents of 0.8 square miles is going to have career firefighters sitting in their firehouse in their district? It just doesn't, that doesn't happen. But because of the merger, in the station's location, of course, we're able to make that happen. But yeah, is the state fire commissioner's office here in PA, they estimate that back in like the 70s and 80s, there was 300,000 volunteer firefighters in Pennsylvania. Now they say that number is like 37,000.
That's crazy.
So like where, who, and it happens. I don't not, like I said, I don't knock the volunteer fire service. I give people all the credit in the world that are going to do this for free, that are going to get out of bed. I especially those guys that really take it serious. I have so many guys here that, they're doing 200 hours a year training as a volunteer.
On top of their daily
Right on top of their
lives.
full-time jobs, their families, like they take it serious. But you if the volunteer fire service isn't paying your bills,
That's a fact.
you got to prioritize. Like you can't put your full-time job and your family aside, for it. And it's not a knock on them that sometimes trucks don't get out or they get out with low staffing. I mean, we even see it here with our career staff. Like sometimes we only get out with one guy. That's all we have on duty. That's all we can afford. But yeah, I mean, mergers, consolidations are the way to go. Unfortunately, there's nothing in the state that allows us to do any type of countywide fire service. They've talked about it, they've pushed it, but a lot of our counties aren't going to bite that bullet, and that headache. It's the way to go, and I've seen a lot of success stories. Like you said, all the stories you talk about, because there's tons of them. Let's face it, you look at, Fire Rescue One, Firehouse, Fire Engineering, there's a story every week popping up about, fire departments merging. And sadly, there's ones popping up about fire departments closing.
Closing. Yes, sir.
It's these departments, and I have to give them credit. It just happened in York County at the end of last year that a department said, "We don't have the people. Oh, we're sorry, but we have to shut our doors. We don't have the people to do this anymore." It had nothing to do with funding. It had nothing to do with municipal support. They didn't have the people, and their officer, their leadership, their management just said, "We're not providing the service. We have to hang it up," type of thing.
And the thing is too, it's not just a PA thing. I'm a northerner from New York myself. There are areas in New York and New Jersey that the amount of trucks compared to and it's astounding. It really is. And like I said, this is coming from a New Yorker. I started as a volunteer, diehard volunteers, but at some point that you areas of the country need to put their ego aside and do what's best for the citizens. And I get it. Like some departments, you make do with what you got. I've been on departments where it's me taking the truck out because that's the only way the truck's getting out. And you've luckily we have people that come on scene and merge and we form a team, but it's 2026. I don't know how long departments can sustain that type of model. It's just not, and because as the years go up, so do the call volume.
Yeah, like we talked about, I mean, my call volume, what it's done. Like I said, we're fortunate. We have this municipal support, and we have a fire tax. My people don't have to fundraise. So like, a lot of volunteer departments and ones around me, I mean, these guys are, they're spending so much time fundraising. And it's like, if you actually kept track of the amount of time you spent fundraising, it's probably more than what you're doing with training or more with call response. They're spending time fundraising to put fuel in fire trucks and to keep the lights and the heat on at the firehouse.
Right.
That shouldn't happen in 2026.
Right.
You know, we joke, you don't ask your police departments in Pennsylvania to fundraise. You don't ask your public works departments in Pennsylvania to fundraise. You know, and I think a lot of people though, and I've seen it, you know, I've said it. You know, we have that mentality, you know, we're firefighters, right? It doesn't matter what wall they put in front of us, we're gonna get over it, we're gonna go around it, we're gonna break it down. You know, we're gonna take these hits and we're gonna keep going and we're gonna continue to provide the service. And I think a lot of people are like, well, screw it. You know, if they don't give us the money, we'll just fundraise harder to provide the service, because they truly do. People do care, and
Right.
they really do want to provide a good service. And they know that, well, if we're not getting municipal support, well, we got to have more bingos or more fish fries or spaghetti dinners.
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
So with your new role now as fire commissioner,
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you, what does the term aggressive in your opinion mean to you?
So what that means to me, and it's kind of an all-encompassing type of thing, because I don't think aggressive only apply you can only apply it to the fire ground. And what I mean when I say that is, to have somebody that's an aggressive firefighter, it has to go just outside of the it has to go outside of the fire ground first. So if you want somebody that's an aggressive firefighter, they have to be somebody that is well trained. And I'm not saying they just sit through the class and run through it. They immerse themselves in what they're doing. You know, they're the ones that are keeping up. You know, they may not read an article every day, but they're keeping up with what's going on. And in turn, that's going to make them, you know, better on the fire ground. They're going to make prompt, decisive actions on the fire ground, you know, because they're a better trained firefighter. You know, they aggressively sought out education and filling their bucket up with whatever they could, you know, about the fire service. So they can do that. They'll apply the appropriate tactics. You know, they may see fire out of three or four windows, but know they can still make an interior attack because they've read about building construction and reading smoke. They are good with, like, you know, the operational flow. They're not letting conditions deteriorate because they were indecisive or they were delayed in what they were doing. So think about it. If they're not sure which, you know, length of line to pull, you know, do we pull the 200 or do we pull the 400? Or do we pull an inch and three quarter or do we pull a two and a half? You know, they're not being indecisive about it. They know when they size it up that, all right, I got to pull this, and they're not delaying, you know, getting water on the fire. And they're really operating with confidence on that fire ground. You know, so it's more than just saying, hey, I'm gonna go in and put fire out and I'm gonna, you know, do an aggressive interior attack. I think that term should really go outside of the box of the fire ground, and you know, this person can do this confidently, not being decisive, do it promptly, make the right decisions because they did all the coursework like before that type of thing. You know, and maybe that plays back into like having that time in, you know. I can remember my first fire I went into. Do you think I was aggressive? No. Like, do you think I was confident? No. So,
It takes
yeah.
that repetition. That
Yeah.
repetition. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, aggressiveness and the model of Weston Burke. So my question is, if a structure fire were to come out right now within your area, what's your first alarm assignment complement?
So we have, you know, we run a ton of automatic aid.
Okay.
You know, so we have that's built into, you know, our run cards is automatic aid based off of mileage. So that way we're always calling the closest companies. So
Gotcha.
there's no buddy box, there's no skipping over, there's no this, there's no that. We're calling the closest units. So out of my department for a first alarm fire, it's my ladder and one of my engines, and that's it. For out of my
Okay.
department. And then we have an additional ladder coming and three additional engines from automatic aid departments.
Okay. So you're not dumping the four the you're not dumping four stations on your initial.
Nope, because the reason would be, say we were to do that, all right?
Okay.
Say we were to, you know, to have that ego and be like, all right, we're gonna dump, you know, the ladder and three of our engines. Well, guess what? Two of my engines aren't getting out. So all we've done now is delay additional help getting there. Because let's face it, the typical residential house fire, what do you really need? Two engines and a ladder, right? And
Okay.
then manpower. So I don't want to delay manpower getting there. So that's why we have it built in with the automatic aid system. And I'm so fortunate because I have two of my automatic aid companies. They're staffed 24 hours a day with four people. So I'm getting a ladder from Wyomissing with four guys and an engine from Spring Township with four. So with my complement on during the day, depending on what time it is with the staggered shifts, and again, I'm not a huge NFPA guy. But there are certain things that I do try to, apply to our department, like when you talk
Right.
about NFPA 1710,
Right.
just because it makes sense. When you really, it doesn't make sense to say you need to wear a turtle shell yellow helmet. What is that? What's the difference to wear a black leather helmet versus that?
Right.
But NFPA 1710, does make sense for the amount of fireground jobs that need to be accomplished and the way that they lay it out. So that's what we work towards, is getting that amount of people, so that 16 people on scene is what we work towards for that residential, house fire. So, I'm good. Like I said, if I have my six guys on, there's six. I have four from Spring, there's 10. I have four from Wyomissing, there's 14. The other engines that are coming are from all volunteer departments. They may have like a daytime staffer, daytime driver. You may have one, you may have two. They may not get out at all. Then you have to cover. So, if you're covering, you're waiting another 10 minutes, 15 minutes for another engine to get there. So, we, try to throw, the people in that we can and work towards that. Again, it all plays into, time of day. Nighttime, hey, you could have 20 volunteers show up for a fire.
Right.
Which is great. I could roll out the door with the engine, the rescue, this engine, this ladder. Yeah, it's phenomenal, but during the day is where we struggle, the most. That's kind of how we go with our staffing and, how what we're throwing at a fire. So four engines and two trucks. And then we have another unit coming as a RIT team on the first
Okay.
line.
And I'll have to say kudos to you, Chief, on doing that, because most people would be like, I'm dumping it.
Yeah,
And
no.
I'm trying not to. anyone who listens that I'm trying, if anyone listening, I'm trying not to like poke the bear, but
Yeah.
I know departments that they'll like dump the house and their area is wide open now. And
Yeah.
then if another call comes in, then the further out units have to come in and respond to it. And like I said, I'm not trying to take away from, but like, I think at this day and age, I mean, if you're able to do that, if you're able to get the coverage, the manpower response, that's awesome. But if you can't, like, I love your model where you're like, I'm having two engines and a ladder and that's it. Now, my question to you is, if you had, are you, do you allow your volunteers to respond from home to get other trucks or
Oh
no?
yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Got it.
They man, they'll cut like, hey, if you're around, and that's our biggest thing. We're fortunate that we have like, out of station one where I'm at, which is our headquarters, is an engine, a water tender, and our heavy rescue out of this station. So like our career guys kind of cross staff the rescue and the engine. Now, we have a lot of areas that are not hydrated in.
Okay.
So about 85, 80%, 75, I can't remember the actual number, is we do have hydrants, and we have a large area that's non-hydrant. And of course, like these areas that are non-hydrant in, they're up on what we call South Mountain, or on the backside of South Mountain. So even for me in the fire SUV to get there, it's like a 15-minute drive
Okay.
because you have to go up and over the mountain. Picture it in a fire truck, So
Right.
we're in a lot of these areas are very rural. So like, if a fire does start, you don't have a neighbor calling. Like, nobody's seeing it. Cars aren't driving by, and these are multi-million dollar homes. We have 10,000 square foot homes out there with no hydrants, anywhere near them. So we're already like behind the eight ball,
Right.
with that responding out there. But yeah, no, we have volunteers, that show up. They'll get the water tender. They'll bring the rescue because it has, an onboard cascade. So, they'll fill cylinders at the scene. Yeah, guys show up. Hey, we have our other stations. It's got a utility truck, the other engine. Like, man, bring it. Just show up, get your gear, hop in the truck, and let's go.
Okay. Now, this is your opinion only. When it comes to recruitment and retention, where do you see the fire service doing good at, and where do you see we're falling short when it comes to that?
So I think we have to put more of an emphasis on retention than we do recruitment, to be honest with you. Just because, and I can look at it from both aspects. Say a career fire department, you hire somebody, you know what that costs, right? Like, think about it. You put somebody through a recruit school, you buy them bunker gear, uniforms, you invest time, you're basically investing money into this person. They leave after a year or two for whatever reason. When I was at James Island, we had guys leave to get out of the fire service altogether. They were just tired of it, or they had their reasons. How much has the department now lost monetarily wise because they left? On the volunteer side, it's tough because life, throws things at people. So we have to do a good job at, like my department, we have a good incentive program. So we do the pay per call. We, pay for all your training. We reimburse you for mileage if you take your personal vehicle. Then you get paid out, if you've done a 40-hour class and you're at, our incentive program is based on training levels. So it kind of goes up. It's that inverted pyramid. So the more training you get, the more money you get. So that's kind of a, it's kind of a push for people to, hey, if you get more training, you get paid more money per call. It's nothing for some people to get a $1,500 check every quarter for calls that they responded to, which makes the home life a lot easier. Hey, if I'm bringing home this, that's why I go on these calls. We're real big on sending people to training, wherever they want to go, as a way to kind of set us apart. So, hey, we've sent people to FDIC, we sent them to Firehouse Expo, Water on the Fire, Fire Fusion, Colorado, Alabama, New Mexico, Maine. We've sent people all over the place. Even our volunteers, just as a, hey, our department's doing this. Look where you could go. It's like joining the Navy, go and see the world. Join Western Berks Fire Department. You can go all across the country and go check out training conferences. So we try to invest a lot into that to set us apart is more of a retention thing, to give that back to our people, that have put in a ton of time. We sent guys to conferences where, all right, we pay for your airfare, we pay for your lodging, and we give you per diem before you leave. We don't ask you for receipts. We don't, no, you can't do this. Here you go. Here's everything covered by us. That way you can just kind of go and enjoy yourself and have a mini vacation or whatever. So we've, as a way to give back to our people, we've tried to do that whole sort of thing. But, I try to, try to make sure that we're keeping people in, that we have and rewarding them for what they're doing. Even smaller stuff like uniforms. I started in the, when I got in the volunteer service, they didn't really hand out stuff. It was, you have to buy it, right? Well, here at Western Birch, I said, no, we're not making people buy anything. Well, we are going to be selling St. Patrick's Day shirts as a fundraiser for a local charity. So shameless plug, there, you can put that on. Better than that, we give people everything they want and we don't buy crappy stuff. We issue Carhartts and we, Carhartt pullovers and dry fits and this, those little things I think go a long way with people as well that, hey, you need something, here it is. You feel like part of the team when you're wearing it. Here's your uniform. Don't mess up your own clothes, type of thing. Recruitment's just, we just had a neighboring department get a career day. And they've done this every year for a local high school. But yeah, they get a couple pokes, but nothing really comes to fruition with it. We have our open house here every year, which we love doing. Great, community turnout every year. And man, we may get one applicant every couple of years. It's, yeah, it's tough,
It's, I
And
can imagine.
I mean, I have found though, if you as a department can really step up your game, that people want to be a part of a high functioning department. You know what I mean? Like they want to be, if you give a damn about the fire service, you want to go somewhere that you may not be the busiest, but you're training and you're up in your game and you're up in your level all the time to provide a really good service. That's what I think, departments really need. It's just, up that game a little bit and they'll find people, you have people that move in, they don't want to waste their time with something that's a shit show. Let's face it, they come, a lot of people come to the firehouse to get away from their home life and to get away from their full-time jobs. They can come here and decompress and disconnect and be a completely different person. But if it's nothing but turmoil and upheaval all the time, man, I wouldn't want to do that. Like, you walk, you leave your house where your kids are crying and yelling at you to come into the
Going to,
firehouse where people are crying and yelling at you.
yeah. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. One question I'd like to ask you, and only answer if you're comfortable. So, with the merger that you did, and I know the merger happened before you got there, but in case anyone's listening, in case any Chiefs listening that's considering, like, hell, we're in this type of situation as well. What did you do with previous captains and Chiefs? Like, did yeah, how did you fit them into the model now? Because I'm sure those organizations had their own respective captains, respective chiefs. So how, if only you can elaborate on that.
So, like I said, and I'm fortunate. I actually have it sitting right back there. So the steering committee, and it was like they called themselves a task force that basically put together the merger and facilitated everything. So they have a whole book on the merger where they kept like the notes from every meeting, and so it has a ton of information there. So that's how I was really able to learn about the merger,
Okay.
and of course talking to people that were a part of it, getting their take on it and what happened. And of course, some takes are good, some takes are bad, they had a pretty broad and expansive org chart when it started because they had four stations,
Right.
so they really tried to incorporate a lot of the officers that were current officers from the legacy departments, into the new department, which I get. Like, again, you can't expect an officer from Department A to have an understanding of the apparatus of Department C.
Right.
So I think to retain a lot of that requisite knowledge of, just the internal equipment and internal workings of those departments, even their areas, they had a pretty expansive one. Then over time it is definitely constricted down. Of course that's through attrition as well. People move on, people leave, people move, family, they get out of the fire service. So we've actually condensed that down to where now, we have two volunteer deputy chiefs, three volunteer captains, and three volunteer lieutenants. So it's gone from a pretty broad one, it's come back down. But
Okay.
they did it that way. I've heard other departments where it's like, well, you've got to no, we're automatically cutting it, which is good and bad. They're ripping the Band-Aid off right away and saying, no, us moving forward as an agency, we need to do this. We're not going to wait 6 months. But in the same token, what are you losing? If you put these people in positions, what are you kind of losing there?
Right.
So it's I see it from both sides, on how that would work or how it would be good or bad.
Okay. All right. Now, with the position that you hold, this is a two-part question.
All right.
What does leadership look like to you, and what kind of leader did you want to be?
So I'll start with the second part first on what kind of leader I wanted to be. There's all of these different terms talking about leadership, right? Laissez-faire and autocratic and
Right.
all that. Remember we started this conversation, I said I had to get up and shut my office door because it's not something I do all the time. Coming up in the fire service, you learn different traits from people. And, for me, it was always one of those that the traits that I learned the most from were the bad traits,
Okay.
where I operated under a leader that was just horrible. And you say to yourself, well, I'm never going to do that, or I'm never going to do that, or I'm never going to do that. It's funny how that kind of outweighs the good leadership traits.
Yep.
So As I started to get into this, in the leadership roles, and don't get me wrong, I've made so many mistakes, I messed up so many times, and I've learned from those mistakes and try not to repeat them. But having this conversation with a buddy of mine, I said I want to be the democratic dictator. So there are times within my position that no, this is how we're doing it, this is why we're doing it, this is what we're doing. I'm the fire commissioner. This is my decision. This is why we're doing this. Where other times I want things to be more of democratic. I want to open it up to, and I try my best to, again, like when I was talking in Cal City, just trying to support people in their individual roles. Well, here it's the same way. You know, if I have somebody come to me and say, "Hey, could we do this?" Yeah, let's make it happen. I want people to have that ownership in their fire department and have their pride in that fire department where, you know, they're able to take on roles and responsibilities, and I can support them and let them make that decision. You know, I'm in a group chat with all my officers, and a lot of times those guys start talking about stuff and I just sit back. Now I will throw things in to stir the pot every once in a while, but I'd let them make those decisions. Like, "Hey guys, you figure it out." You know, one of my deputies, Jason, you know, a lot of times I'll just tell him, "You figure it out. You figure it out. You figure it out." So I try to let things be, you know, that way it gives people that ownership. But yes, there are those times when, you know, I have to put my foot down and say, "No, this is why we're doing it." And of course, a lot of people may not have the understanding of the why right then, but then they figure it out later down the road. Or once I make that, or, you know, once I give an explanation on why we're doing that type of thing. So you say, like, what was the first one? What's leadership look to me? Or how's it look?
Yeah,
Or how I do?
so like you talked about what kind of leader that you wanted to be, that you are today, but the other question is, what does leadership look like to you?
Man, I mean, I think it's an individual-based thing. Of course, everybody seeks out, you know, something different from everybody, right? Like, especially like in my department, being a combination, you know, like the leadership that I have with this person has to be different with this person. You know, I have to, you know, I have, you know, guys that are 18, 19-year-old kids in college. And then I have grown men. Then I have retirees. You know, I think it, you know, what that looks like to me is it has to be adaptable, you know, for each person. And you almost have to kind of meet their own needs. You know, I literally, you have to change how you are with people. So I don't think there's really like a set thing on how it looks. I think it's more of a, you know, it's a case, I don't want to say case by case basis, but, you know, and it's just being there for that person. You know, this person may need me, you know, just to have that conversation, just to have an open ear, just to have the open office door, and maybe that's what they need, you know, and maybe, you know, oh, well, under previous leadership, I didn't have this, so then I try to provide it or try to give them that, even if it's just, like I said, having the open ear, the open office door. Yeah, I think that's a tough one to answer though, because it's so situational.
Yeah,
Based on the
especially in your
person.
situation.
I mean, it's even like I look at it in my home life, like my two kids. You know, they look for different stuff between me and my wife, like what they want from each of us. You know, and I mean, I think it's the same way when you're trying. I mean, and granted, as parents, we're leaders in our home. I mean, my 4-year-old thinks he runs the roost, but I mean, he kind of does. but I think it's that same way in the fire service, like. You know, there people are looking at us as, you know, they're an individual and they need something different leadership wise from all of us. Yeah.
When it comes to mentorship, you talked about earlier how, you know, you have those friends, those lifelong friendships that you made in Cal City. You still talk to
Yep.
those individuals, man. How important is it for anyone getting into the fire service to find that mentor? Because I'm sure for you, especially in your situation, if you had a question, you could just pick up one of your good friends that you can talk to and have that conversation.
Yeah. So it's important that you have one inside of your department and outside of your department. And just for the fact of when you're having an issue with that person inside your department, who do you reach out to? Yeah, you have to like the fire services, you know, like I said, when I got started as a 15-year-old junior firefighter, I never would have guessed where I would be now. And where my fire service journey has taken me. It's like the Grateful Dead say, what a long, strange trip it's been. And that is the honest to God truth on how my fire service career has been. But the people that I've been able to meet and the people you've been able to network with. And, you know, that's where, like, you know, it pays off getting outside of your bubble and going to conferences or going here or stepping out of your game and out of your normal game and meeting all these people. You have to have that network. And, you know, some are like the professional networks. Like, I'm a member of the Pennsylvania Career Fire Chiefs Association, which is a phenomenal group of guys that, you know, hey, if I have a question, I can literally send an email and get 10 replies from the organization on, you know, like, hey, do you have a policy on XYZ? So you have that, you know, that professional networking on that side of it. That's a, you know, kind of a structured thing, but then you have that, you know, informal network of just your friends and your peers that you have met. And it's so important, like I said, to look outside of your own agency. Just 'cause, you know, you people in your own agency are always going to have the same mindset on a lot of stuff. And, you know, how do you, I mean, let's face it, like, let's get into like a, you know, quick discussion, like, all right, you know, smooth bore versus fog. All right. And if you're at a fire department that has run fog nozzles for the, you know, since the beginning of time, and you read an article about, oh my God, well, we could, you know, deliver more water and have longer reach and better penetration with less nozzle reaction and a lower pressure. This is the greatest thing in the world. Well, you go to your peer inside, what are you going to get? Oh, well, we use fog nozzles.
Right.
You know, just that conversation. If you're in the same mindset, that way, if you get outside of your bubble, outside of your department, I mean, even going to somebody in the department next door or somebody you went to recruit school with, or, you know, it, yeah. And I think everybody kind of, you know, and there's, for me, like, one of my good buddies, his name is Brad Weick. Brad and I went to our, Essentials, which was in PA. That's like our beginner fire school when we were 15, 16 years old. Brad was from a different department. I still talk to Brad, you know, all the time. You know, and he's from an all-volunteer fire department out in Washington County, Pennsylvania. And, you know, it's funny though, like, Brad and I like what I've been able to do in my career, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm better than Brad, I'm greater than him, I'm this and that. We're just in different departments in different places in our fire service career. But man, I still talk to him all the time and get advice. You know, so I think we also have to that stigma of, you know, well, I'm a career guy, I can only talk to career guys. Or, oh man, I'm a volunteer and I'm not talking to him because he's a career guy. You could pick up so much stuff from anybody that just loves the fire service and wants to make the fire service better. You know, it doesn't matter what the paycheck says or if you're getting one or not. You can pick up so much stuff from so many different people. You just have to be open to it. You know, and I think the other thing with that is having those hard conversations, where sometimes, you know, your network and your peers and your good buddies, they're gonna set it out for you. Like, when you're messing up or you're doing something wrong, man, they're gonna call you out. You know, maybe even going back to the leadership stuff. Again, talking about my one deputy, Jason, and his brother, his twin brother, is actually one of my captains, Joey. Those guys have called me out on stuff. You know, I'm their boss, and they've called me out. You know, they've had that tough conversation with me, and yeah, I'm their boss, they're my subordinates, but, you know, hey, they're also in my network. They're also one of my peers. I think that's important to have as well, that those people that are going to tell you that you're messing up or you're doing it wrong, or, man, you need to take a look in the mirror. You got to, you know, you're, what are you doing? You need to reset yourself somehow. Yeah, because who else is going to tell you that?
No, and that to me, that's key. That's true friendship. And you know, we all know of individuals who they say that they're whatever's friend, but like they'll watch that person sink the ship and they'll just stand back and be like, I mean, you know, like I don't know. But the key thing for this example, this conversation is the fact that yes, you are the fire commissioner, but your ego is so not blown out of proportion where if one of those individuals go, hey, chief, like you're messing up, like you have that mindset to think back, stop and go, shit, he's right.
Yeah,
Like
because think about it. If I don't listen to them, and it, you know, it's happened. It's only going to be a detriment to the fire department. You know, we don't want that. Like, you know, I want to make sure that we're delivering the best services possible at all times. And that's on people's worst days. It could be them. Like yesterday, we got a drone out of a tree for a little girl. All right, like that's, you know, that was the highlight of our day. We got this drone out. We set the stick up. Guy climbed the ladder, got the drone out. But, you know, you're. It's a 12-year-old girl got this drone stuck. No big deal. But all the neighbors come out, they see it, they love it. Oh my God, you guys are amazing, right? That's what we want. We want our public to be our biggest cheerleaders. So if I'm messing up at the top, and of course that's going to filter down, and nobody's going to call me out on it, what's that going to do when it gets to the bottom? Our service delivery is going to suck. We're not that. That's what we, that's what we're here for. That's what our focus has to be on at all times is our service delivery. We could have all the BS in the firehouse. When the bell goes off, you got to deliver it. But if I'm not doing my part as the cog in the wheel, because I'm just a very small cog in the wheel. But if that cog breaks or if it's not greased, where are we going to be?
No, for sure. Okay. How do you try to bring realistic training for your department? Because like you said, you're supplementing, you have career guys, and it's easy for the career guys to get their training because while they're at the station, they can knock out whatever. Hey, let's throw a couple ground letters. Let's go do some pre-plans. But incorporating that with your volunteers and making it worthy with their time, how do you balance that?
So we're really fortunate here in Berks County. We have an awesome training site. Our county burn building is phenomenal. If you ever just Google Berks County Fire Training Center, you can check out our burn building. It is to me, it's one of the best ones in the country. It is just phenomenal what it is. So with it, you have to have somebody that pushes you to make better training, right? Got a guy in our department, Andrew, joined a couple of years ago, came in, tons of experience, state instructor. He has kind of taken on this pseudo role of like our training officer because we don't I technically have one on the books. But this guy has come in and pushed us to be better training wise and puts forth the effort to create better training. So, how we try to make it as realistic as possible is like, he's a good instructor. So he's able to put forth that effort, but also deliver a really good product, even to our people in house. So we try to get down to our fire training center, and we do our company level burns. We do a couple of those a year. So we focus on, commercial, residential. We do daytime burns on weekdays for like our career staff. We do like Saturday burns for volunteers. We do some Monday night burns for volunteers just to, I mean, these guys have been in this building 100 times, but we still just try to go through the motions. And it's when you're going through the motions, it's not having the line laying outside the door and say, go put in the fire. It is stretching a line, throwing ground ladder, searches, radio traffic. Somebody is an IC, giving a size up. Trying to incorporate everything you're doing on the fire grounds into that. But then when you get outside of that, we can't go down there all the time. It's not in our first due area. Hey, we have the blue door sitting on the bay floor. We've had that for years. And like, hey, there's always wood sitting next to it. So anytime anybody wants to bang on the blue door, go for it. We have a standpipe prop, we have an FDC prop, a hose line pulling prop. Trying to just invest that money to make stuff as realistic as possible. And then just letting people do it. If somebody has an idea that we want to run this training, then go for it. Or, hey, there's a bunch of guys sitting around on a Saturday. Hey, we want to go flow water. Hey, man, have at it. Go for it. I think that's how you get, it's not as, I won't say as realistic, how your question was, but it's don't hold back from people and let them, if they want to do something, let them go do it. Let them put something together. Hey, I want to teach a class. Go for it. So I said, what I've done with this guy, Andrew, like, man, he wants to do stuff and I'm all for it. I love it. He puts such good stuff together and delivers really good stuff for the department. I never turn it down. So we try to do whatever we can, and looking back on, what I was saying, like one of the other things was like, we got, whole new set of Halmacher OmniShore struts on the truck. We have a great, when you talk about realistic training, also trying to incorporate all your community partners and like what you have in your first due. So like, we're fortunate we got like some, great commercial stuff that guys could go do aerial setups. A great tow company in our first due called Spittler's. They provide us cars. They have a tractor trailer that are going to flip over for us to use these OmniShore struts with. excuse me. But just getting out of the station, just trying to go do stuff. Even I've seen my ladder crew one time. They were, I was like, I was looking, I went down to the station, they weren't there. And I'm like, oh, where the hell are they? And I pull it up on the map and I'm like, well, they're over on Aspen Avenue. What are they doing over there? And I drive over and they're doing aerial setups in a single family home. I'm like, oh, okay, have at it, guys. Like, so I don't know. I think I don't know if that really answers the question on
No,
realistic training, but trying
yeah.
to, letting people just do, empowering people to, hey, I want to run this training, let's do it. Or I have a topic for training, let's do it. I unfortunately, with a lot of my time constraints, somebody can't come to me and say, well, I want to train on this. All right, we'll put it together. I can't do it. You could do it. But again, giving them that ownership, and that way it's also covering everything that they want to do with it. I may not meet their expectations with what they wanted to see.
Okay. All right. I always like to ask the guests this last question, and
Yes.
it is, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
Oh, man, in the fire service or life in general,
Both.
or
It could be both. It could be one or the other, whatever you're comfortable
I'm
answering.
gonna tell you, you get into the level of chief, and yeah, you poke around, you look at jobs, and you always say about, oh man, that'd be a cool job, or it'd be cool to take on that department or go work there. Like I always said, like, oh man, it'd be so cool to go work for like a countywide fire service somewhere, like a big department. And as I get older, this is kind of one of the things. We had an intermunicipal agreement that was started in 2009 when Western Birch Fire Department was formed. And last year in March, April timeframe, we started to rewrite the agreement. And I didn't think, I figured it would take all of 25 and then 26. We'd enact this in 27. And I saw the municipal support that we had to get this done sooner. And we were able to put together this whole new agreement that really sets us up for the future here at Western Berks. So we got it enacted. Like it was crazy. Like I still can't believe we got it done. Four municipalities to sign this new agreement with tax increases and scheduled tax increases over the next couple of years, and they all agreed to it. Looking outside, like, oh yeah, it'd be cool to do this, but getting this agreement done was, I always say, it was one of like the highlights of my career that we were able to push it. And then when I look at like, how good Western Berks is taking care of myself and my family, I don't really see myself going anywhere. As long as they want to keep me here, and as long as I keep doing my job and I keep pushing, if I get stagnant or stale, excuse me, that's a time for me to move on. But as long as I got, good people in this department that, like, again, like these people that push me and that push the department to be better, I'm pretty good while I'm here. The only thing that I could really see myself doing differently, besides the fire service, would to go be like a municipal manager somewhere. My wife and I have had that conversation where I'd go be like a township manager or borough manager, having all, you're basically working right underneath your board and having everybody, report to you. I've been in this position now reporting to them, and I think that'd be kind of cool to immerse yourself in. I love local government stuff, so I think that'd be really neat to, take over working in that and doing all the different stuff that that job entails. But other than that, I'm pretty content. Like I said, I have a great group of people here, people that push me, push the department forward. Said they've been great to me, been great to my family. It's a good family atmosphere and just great people. So I don't really see myself. Maybe I'll start a podcast.
And as far as your boys, would you like to and would you like to see them potentially dabble in the fire service, or would you be okay if they
So,
didn't?
it's so funny you asked that. I've had people ask me that question, like, oh, do you want your, so my oldest son is Jonah. He's 9 years old. And my youngest son, his name is Eamon. He's 4 years old. And, I've had people ask me that, like, oh, do you want them to be in the fire service? And I said, I really don't know. They are both very unique children. They're both very different, which is cool. They have their likes, they have their dislikes. Jonah's real big into movies. Like, he loves Back to the Future, Jurassic Park, Ghostbusters, Jaws. Like, he's like Dawson Leary from Dawson's Creek. Like, that's Jonah. Eamon is just a feral child that God knows what. That kid's got always has food on his face and is running amok and jumping up and down on the couches. If they want to do it, great. I would never push them to it. Just 'cause I mean, Danny, it takes a certain person to get in the fire service, right? And especially when you look at the commitment, like, here, even our volunteers, the amount of calls that they get a year. That's a lot. That's a lot to leave birthday parties, family events. When you're doing it as a career, sometimes the fun goes away because now it's your job. You're working crazy shifts, you're away from family. And we know, like, let's face it, when it's your career, you want to be at the firehouse. Like, I love my family, but man, when you miss a fire, like, if you take off and you miss a fire, you're mad, right? You're like, man, I got it. Especially when you hear about it, you're like, oh, that was a great fire. I would never push them just for the fact of, I don't want to push them into something that they wouldn't want to do. I want them to be that their decision. I don't want them to do it just because I've done it. I was the trailblazer in my family. I'm first generation firefighter. Nobody else in my family was ever in the fire service. But I want them to do their thing. And I tell my wife all the time, like, I want them to, build a life for themselves that they can go on, family vacations, own a nice house, and put me in a nice home when I'm old. That's what I want them to, be able to take care of me when I'm old is what I want them to be able to do. And if they do it, great. If not, hey, I'll support them 110%. So.
All right. Chief, I have to say thank you for taking time every day to do this.
Yeah.
I love the fact that it's a trend. Like I said, you're the second chief to come on and be like, I'm part of an organization that has consolidated into one. We've had this conversation earlier, and I think everything you mentioned was spot on, whether or not people are going to agree with it or not.
Yeah.
We have to look at, are we providing the best service for the community? Are we getting, yes, we're getting the rigs out the door, but are we meeting? And like you said, I'm not a huge NFPA person as well. Like, I believe there are some things that, yes, but there are a lot of things that's like, what? But
Yeah.
anyways, are we getting the rigs out the door with the amount of staffing, proper staffing, training members? It's crazy to say it, but like the volunteers, that there's not very many. A lot of people don't want to do this type of job, but this is a we're in a field that it's very important that we have people that respond to emergencies, especially if the area is strictly volunteer. So I love the fact, I love how your mindset is. I love how you talk about it's not just about you, it's about your organization as a whole. You hold your members accountable and they also hold you accountable, and you understand that. So I just want to say thank you for coming on, sharing your passion, sharing your message for others to hear. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. Like I said, I love it. Great conversation. I'm kind of glad, like, yeah, we stuck to like two things on the script, but other than that, we kind of went down those rabbit holes. But I loved it, and thanks to Mark alone for making the recommendation. So,
Oh yeah,
but just
speaking of, how did you meet Mark?
so we were in prison. No, I'm just kidding. So
Oh,
I met Mark. So we were both. This was back in. Was it 2021? I
okay.
think maybe 2021, 2022. We were both teaching at Firehouse Expo in Columbus, Ohio. And I had a buddy of mine that was out for drinks. I met up with him. Mark and a couple other guys were there. Mark and I started talking. It was just one of those, and I knew he was from like all of his Facebook stuff from his page. And so we just started the chat, and then it was, I think, like the next year at Firehouse Expo, I was doing a leadership roundtable, and I asked Mark to be on it, like a tailboard talk, tailboard discussion from the floor. So like I asked Mark to be on it. The next, we just kind of kept we'd see each other at events. We text like every once in a while or a Facebook message, but again, when you talk about like your network and your peers, that's one of those guys. Like I could, gladly reach out to him and ask him a question, and he would definitely get back and vice versa. So, it's a guy that I've met a couple times at conferences, but we've shared, phone numbers and Facebook messages, and yeah, that's kind of how that went.
Okay.
So,
Awesome. Awesome. Chief Alone, I got to say thank you. I try to remember the individual that puts me in contact with the guests. So Chief Alone, thank you for recommending Jared. It's been a great conversation. And like I said, sir, continue your passion. Your mindset is awesome. We need more chief officers like that. It's not about it's not about what's on your collar. It's more about what's in your heart and how your mindset is toward the fire services. So like I
yeah,
said,
thanks,
thank you.
man. Yeah, it was a great time. Thank you.
Yes, sir.